Show number two of Sit Down Stand-Ups. I'm John DeCause.
I'm Tim Benker. And did you almost forget the name of the show?
I did. I did. I was like, wait a minute. You got me confused because you call it...
I call it Sit Down Stand-Up.
Stand-up. Yeah.
No, it's Stand-Ups.
Stand-Ups.
Because we're going to be talking to more than one person who's done stand-up in their time.
And that's what this is about. We're going to be interviewing comedians. It's what we do. It's what we've been doing for 72 years combined. I just found that out.
That can't be.
I know. It's like ridiculous.
1982 was...
Well, I'm getting Social Security. Are you?
I am not.
Bam, that's on you.
No, I'll be... when I retire, there'll be... You'll hear a box slam, and they'll be pulling me out of wherever.
So as we said on show number one, we are interviewing each other to start it off, and then we will go around and interview all the people we've met, a lot of the people we've met in 36 years between us.
Now, we did talk to you on show number one.
And I was number one.
Of course, all of you already listened to that one.
Yes. Yes.
So,
and if you're tuning in, really? No, that's okay.
I want to thank you, Bob, for listening.
Right, right. So, show number two, I'm going to interview Tim Benker.
Enough about me. What do you think of me?
That's good. So, let's start off, Tim. Let's get right into this. Where did you grow up?
I grew up on the northwest side of Chicago, and it's important to know that I was number six of seven kids.
Oh, okay. You know, even I didn't know where you came in the number.
Yeah, you did.
No, okay. I didn't.
All right, well, I was number six. I was the youngest boy. But I always had an audience.
Okay.
Always had an audience. I was always the one. I was always trying to get a laugh. I was always the one that got smacked in church because I was the one that made everybody else laugh.
Okay. So. All right. So, yeah, were you... God, I hate to use that class clown. I hate that.
Hey, I'm not so much class clown. I was the house clown. I was at home more than... You know, I was the one who, if Dad got mad, I would say something, and then I would get the steely look from Dad, and I would, you know, wet myself, and that would be. But I was always the one that kind of lightened up the situation as we were growing up.
Where do you get your humor from, Mom or Dad?
I want to say Dad.
Okay,
Dad was extremely he was subtle about, but he was extremely funny. He had he always had little quips, and my dad's really good sense of humor in combination with an uncle. I won't mention Uncle Arthur's name.
Okay.
But he always told the jokes. He always told the public domain jokes.
Okay.
And so he was kind of like an amateur comic because, you know, he worked for the fire department in the fire before 911. That was the fire alarm office. And he always told the public domain jokes. And he always would get, you know, a party going and everything.
Yes.
And I was like, hey, I kind of like that. I kind of like that. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, and I was a thespian.
Now, I was going to ask because I know.
But I'm married to a woman now. And.
No, that means you're still a thespian.
That's right.
Okay.
So yeah, I did plays in school and
high school or grade school and high school.
I was Pooh-Bah in the Mikado in seventh grade. I sang.
I read that review.
It was a Charmin commercial. Yeah. No, I actually sang bass in seventh
Papa
grade.
Papa played fiddle.
It's Gilbert and Sullivan show.
Yes, it
an
is.
Operetta. Yeah, I played Pooh-Bah. I was one of the only bass kids in seventh grade. So I that was, and he got a lot of laughs, and I was just like, I kind of like this. This is really this is really cool. So I haven't gotten a laugh on the stand-up stage, but still hoping for that.
I know that you told me you worked for Jewel.
Yes.
Was that at the time you started stand-up? Or
I started stand-up with you in 82, and I worked at Jewel till 84.
So were you let's go back to 82.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find out about, because you started where again?
At the Comedy Cottage in Rosemont.
Okay. And how did you find out about that?
All right. It was a girl who I was dating who was trying desperately to get rid of me. She had read a bunch of things that I had written. I'll have to rewind to high school. In sophomore year, I was a part of the Instant Oatmeal Comedy Company.
Okay. Very good.
Saturday Night Live had taken off.
Correct.
It was extremely funny. So some friends of mine and myself, we wrote a bunch of sketches. I, of course, wrote, it was at the time, I think it was called Captain Newsroom. So basically, it was Weekend Update. I was writing my own brand of Weekend Update stories as Captain Newsroom. And so I had all these sketches, and this girl was just like, I really don't want to date you, but you're kind of funny. So she had said, oh, my mother used to go to the Comedy Cottage in Rosemont. You should try this stuff out. So I it was just a cold winter.
Did you know anybody when you went?
I knew no one.
No one. Did you go see a show first?
I did not.
You're kidding. So you just showed up on audition night.
I showed up on audition night, and I had a couple of things to choose from that I was going to perform. I actually performed, you may or may not know this, my first night on stage, I performed as Art Latrobe, the singing weatherman. And it was...
No.
You had to have heard about this.
I heard about it. I never saw it.
Well, basically, it was just a crazy five-minute thing about this weatherman. Hey, Monday is just going to be the pits for me because rainy days and Mondays always get me down. And that's, you know, that's where the laugh is supposed to be.
Wow, we got 36 years out of that?
But it was, you know, and I sang Stormy, and I sang Windy, right. And all
any song
things.
That, yeah.
And at the end of the sketch, was the Singing in the Rain was the last song, and I come and I pop open this automatic umbrella, and I have a spray bottle, and I'm spraying the water up in the air as I'm singing. Singing, it was ridiculous.
How was it received?
You know what? I don't know. There was a fine line between laughing at and laughing with.
I know.
So, but. I think they admired my courage. I came back the following Thursday and did basically back to the instant oatmeal. I was instead of Captain Newsroom, I was T.R. Benker in the New Wave News.
Right.
So I did the news stories, and it went very, very well this time.
And is that when you got hired?
I got hired as a full-time comic. We didn't talk about this on the last show, but the guys who started the Comedy Cottage know you got $2 a show.
$2 a show. Blue sheet signed, $2 a show.
Right. Was it a blue? Yeah, it was a blue sheet that you got.
Toomey's the only one who still has his.
Yeah,
it's not a blue sheet; it's a handwritten thing. But.
Right.
So wait, go back. Now this is interesting because when I first saw you, which you started in what year? What month?
It was January.
January. Okay, and my wife and I saw you. My girlfriend at the time saw you May.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first saw you, you were the first comic I ever saw on stage,
mm-hmm.
and you were doing Tim Benker, the New Wave News.
Right.
I opened the show.
Right.
After the MC.
Right. And I did that probably for close to a year.
Okay. I didn't know what the time frame was. But you, we just remember we were kind of blown away. We were blown away by everybody that night. But you were so good. You were so good.
I think I was more well-written than I was well-performed at the time. Doing plays did not prepare me for stand-up at all. You did rely on other people. You relied on music. You relied on costumes when you were doing shows. But now it's all you.
But didn't it help you because you were in front of people?
It did. It did. That was one part that it did help. But
So at that point, you're working at Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably something people don't know about, but wasn't it then, around that time, that you did for the Guinness Book of World Records?
All right, I did... I was a strange young man because I did my first one in 82. I did 26-hour joke marathon for the Neediest Children's Fund at Jewel.
Oh, that's it. Okay, very good.
That was Wally Phillips had me on. It was really fun. Then I did a 30-hour one. Somebody convinced me to do 30 hours. I don't know why. We always did it for charity. And then the Snuggery, the nightclub chain in town here, they wanted me to do a 48-hour joke marathon. And I just
I'll do that. I'll tell jokes.
And I just told public domain jokes for 2 solid
days. Okay, yeah, but
and
still.
I drank a lot of tea and coffee and chloraseptic.
And what are we talking? You got, how long do you do and then you get a break?
You get you go 55 minutes, you can get a five minute
break.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you could accumulate the breaks. I did that. You could repeat jokes. It wasn't good for your brain because, you know, if you were repeating stuff, you were just like, you weren't forced to be. Thinking about things, but you could not read them. You could use notes. I had just keywords that I could look at on cards.
And do you have any idea how much money you raised on those?
$17, I think, combined for all six joke marathons. No, but I would say that Jewel, I think we did maybe a couple $1,000.
Okay.
We did the big one that I had done. God, there were just too many. I don't know why.
I know.
I look back and I go, I can't get that time back.
I know.
And now, you know, we're in our mid-50s. I want that time back now. It's like, I could have slept. I did... it was still the Oprah Winfrey show. It was AM Chicago still.
Correct.
Before the Oprah Winfrey show happened. I was on with Oprah on the AM Chicago show. I did 49 and a half hours because I had to break somebody else's record. And I did it in Marshall Field's window.
Okay, see, I didn't know that.
Yes.
I didn't know you did it in the Marshall Field's window.
And I finished on AM Chicago with Oprah. And for me, this kept me going for a few years. I cracked up Oprah. She's talking to me. I'm hoarse. I'm done. She goes, "What are you going to do now?" I go, "I'm taking a nap, babe." And she she wet herself. But that was my claim to fame there.
And then you go to Vegas.
Yes, I go to Vegas. Do the 72-hour joke marathon. And so, I did that. I was gone for 4 hours. I could not physically I was moving and I was but I had no idea where I was. I kind of, my subconscious fell asleep while I was, but anyway, towards the end I regained, anyway, so they hired me at the radio station after I had done the joke.
In Vegas?
Yes, in Vegas.
And what station was it?
It was on KOMP.
And how long were you on there?
92.3 KOMP. It was 2 years and change. And then my big break came. I went to Houston after that.
Okay. How did that come about?
I was just like, I'm making little money. I was going from market number 42 to market number 9 in radio. Okay. So I'm like, okay. Yeah. I also did stand-up. When I was in Vegas, I did a lot of stand-up on and off the strip. And so I was just like, okay, next step. Because my goal was to do radio in Chicago. So so we moved to Houston. They rolled out the red carpet. We were there for 8 months, and they sent us home.
That's unfortunately, that's radio, right?
That's a common story in radio.
What type of show are you doing? Is it just a talk show, or is it music, top 40? What is it?
At KOMP in Las Vegas, it was a rock and roll show.
Okay.
And we did 4 breaks that were about 6-7 minutes per hour. So it was, you know, it was almost like 50-50 in the morning. We did a lot of talking. And then in Houston at 93Q, I think we were the last of the morning zoos ever.
Okay.
And it was just like real quick quips. And I did sports as well. And and I wasn't trying to be funny, but I think I did say San Antonio Sperms more times than I would care to.
Okay.
How could you not? It was just an accident 100 times. But anyway. So, yeah, so that was radio. But
did you do stand-up in Houston?
Yes, I did. There was
Houston being the home of the Outlaws, the Comedy Outlaws.
Yes.
You know, yes. Bill Hicks. And
right. But, I didn't do so well because, I was a Yankee.
Oh, okay.
So they, at least that's what they said. But came back and continued. I always did something with comedy as well. I always like to do the radio. I have a couple different characters. The very famous Lance Vegas.
Yes.
Evolve, which is a kind of a musical parody show, if you will.
Right. I've seen it many times. And it's and so you come back to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You're still doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
Not what, on a full-time basis or on a part-time basis?
Well, when I came back, it was kind of part-time because, I got married, had a kid, all that kind of stuff. And I worked for TDC Games. TDC Games did adult conversation games.
Oh,
so my writing,
I forgot about
that. My writing skills got honed a little bit because we would write these funny party games. We did a couple of humor-based games. We did adult trivia, the joke edition, where basically we would give somebody the... Oh my goodness! You couldn't even look at that game right now. It would be so taboo. Now, so you'd ask the setup, and you'd have to guess the punchline to the particular joke.
Oh, okay.
And that was adult trivia, the joke edition. And then we did the improv comedy game, which is kind of similar, where you'd have to kind of guess what the punchline was. So, that kept my writing going and my interest in being funny, but kept doing the stand up.
Yeah, wasn't there a time you were producing some shows in Chicago?
I was producing some shows. Why? Do you remember something that I don't?
Something with the Snuggery? I thought you were doing...
Oh, yeah, I did. We had done some comedy. I produced, and this is funny in a different kind of way, I produced it was called like the Most Athletic Female. At the time, it was like these aerobic competitions became real famous, so I got to host those. They had lip sync competitions, which I was the host of. Still, I got to riff during that. I got to introduce people. I got to make fun of the acts if they were heinous when they left the stage. So that was always really good. And like I said, that was one of the places we did a joke marathon. There was a lot of hosting. Wacky.
Well, but like me, you picked up as a house MC in Zany's, mm-hmm. mid late 90s, something like that?
Right, late 90s, doing the house MC. A lot of fun to do. And like, you're staying in town. And unlike the other clubs, they liked the first act, the MC, to be sharp, to be experienced. Because if you go to a place and you got to sit through a guy who has no idea what he's doing.
Exactly.
And then the next guy has a hard time, even though he might be experienced and he's funny, he's digging himself out of a hole. Yeah. So Zany's did a right thing by that. I enjoyed doing that a lot. I learned from one of my mentors, which would be you. your sharpness, your the way that you interact with the audience. Hey, wait, this is my interview, not yours. Let me talk about me. But anyway, that was I always enjoyed doing the house. To this day, I did one last night.
Yeah, and there's just some people who are naturally good at it. So
I'd like to think.
I no question about it because you're quick, you're very fast, you're likable, all of that. Well, actually, it's a good time to take a break because. As you know, we're sponsored every show. This show, we are fortunate to have Panzone's Pizza.
Mm.
So let's hear from them.
Ponzo's Pizzas in Elmwood Park. Come on down to Ponzo's Pizza and Sandwiches this weekend. We throw only the finest ingredients on top of ginormous hunk of bread and smashes it together in a melty, drippy treat for you to shove in your friggin' face. It makes my mouth wet. Order a pan-shaped sandwich with mozzarella and gabagool, and we'll throw in a side order of caponade. Even if you don't understand plain English, that's a great deal. It's pizza time at Ponzo's. Order an extra large 12-topping pizza, and we'll slop on a gross of buffalo wings for like $69. Nobody's got more meat on their pie than Ponzo's. Order a sausage, pepperoni, Italian beef, and meatball pizza, and we'll throw in the pulled pork, Canadian bacon, absolutely free. During Ponzo's Meat Month, buy one back bacon and smoked butt pizza and get another for the same price. Call Ponzo's now and ask about our short-term, high-interest cash loan program. We got rates that'll take you out at the knees. Ponzo's Pizza and Sandwiches. Eat this.
Okay, we're back. We're back talking with Tim Banker on sit-down stand-ups. Tim was about halfway through telling us about his past in stand-up comedy and in radio.
Right. I've only gotten through 18 of the 36 years.
But it's interesting. You come back to Chicago. Now we're like early 2000. You're back in Chicago. I find it interesting that, comedy, comics always hate when somebody comes up to and go, what do you do? So what do you do for a living? Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, I'm a comic. Mm-hmm. Or don't quit your day job.
Right.
But here's the funny thing. Your day job, you decided to take it to a whole nother notch. You own your own company.
I do. I have 17 years, Northwest Carpet Cleaning. It's a carpet cleaning business. I didn't know we were going to talk about this because it's a different hat. I can't be funny anymore. I have to talk about dirt. I have to show you pictures of clean carpets on my phone. It's you know what? There's too many stories of guys who, they're artists, right? So they sacrifice everything and they live in their car and they get 2-3 divorces and they don't know who their kids are. Didn't want any of that. I've always had stand-up. I love doing stand-up. I've never thought of myself as an act. When I do Las Vegas, that's an act. I've done the Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid, that's an act. But that's me. That's me on stage. I know you're the same way. I don't think you're making things up, but that's pretty much your personality that's coming out. And that's how I always thought that I was.
But I've always I want to commend you on that because you can do comedy at night. You can mm-hmm. do comedy part-time. You mm-hmm. can you don't have to, just put all your eggs into one basket.
Right.
And I think it's really good. It's funny you talk about divorces. And how does your second wife feel about this?
Well, and what's really funny, my first wife, she supported. She would push me for shows and do all this other stuff. And kaput. I've been married to Jeannie for 22 years. She could give a rat's patoot about... she loves coming to the shows, but she's like, okay, I've seen it already. She likes, though, we talked about going up and hosting and just riffing and working with the crowd. She absolutely loves that. She thinks that's the best because she knows... That's me. It's not me doing an act. It's me just
being myself. It's just myself. You know?
So, yeah. And, yeah, it's a delicate balance. God bless people like yourself. Now you may have had an odd job here and there over the years, but if you could do it, fantastic. I like my things, so I can. And I'm type A. There's 24 hours in a day. If I could work 24 and not have to sleep, I would probably do that. So,
but I find it interesting because it's very therapeutic for you to do comedy.
It is. When I'm cleaning carpets, I think about jokes. And when I do comedy, if I'm doing shows regularly, I don't punch the wall or kick the dog.
Yeah. I totally get that. It's a great setup. Now, here's the thing. I have firsthand not only because we started together, mm-hmm. but over the years we've worked together many times. And then within the last 4 or 5 years, we've worked a lot together mm-hmm. because we're both involved with Steve Cochran.
Right.
And so talk a little bit about our New Year's Eve and the shows that we've done.
Working with you and Steve Cochran and the New Year's shows, and we've done various shows throughout the year. We've done the live Steve Cochran show.
Yep.
It's a different attitude altogether. We work in theaters. I was talking with John Roy, another comic, last night. There's a different expectation. You sit down in the theater, it's like, I'm going to be entertained. And when somebody does a joke, it's boom! It's right. I mean, because they don't know what to expect. They're going to be entertained. Yeah, they may see somebody dancing. They may shed a tear because somebody, whatever. But theater is just, it's just a whole different experience than doing a club. So that element, working with Steve Cochran is just, I mean, to be in a studio with him.
Right.
Is totally different from listening to him on the air. To watch him and to be, see all that happening is fantastic. And then he goes out and he does stand-up. When he brings what he does on the radio onto the stage, it's magnificent. And you produce these shows, and that's not easy to do.
But you know, it's I'm glad you brought that up, because yes, I do. But I am so grateful that you have been along for the ride the last 4 or 5 years, because you're our announcer. But you put together all the technical end of it, you know, as far as Steve's... So much that you do behind the scenes that nobody knows.
I hope the people at home love us as much as we do, John.
That would be wonderful.
No, and I appreciate what you're saying.
But it's the truth.
But it's the truth. We love doing it, and yeah. Guess what? It's not a chore.
It's a wonderful thing. So yeah. I have not seen you do Las Vegas in a while. Mm-hmm. Any chance you could bring that back?
Yes.
Okay.
Las Vegas is coming back.
Okay.
I just have to wear a wig now, because my
okay.
Lance's
right.
hair was always really coiffed, and my hair is not coiffing very much anymore.
Well, so. And talking about shows, because I produce, I didn't really produce this, but I took this show that you worked on very hard, mm-hmm. and I was fortunate enough to be able to put it in the Metropolis Theater, and I'm talking about Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid.
And like I said, they're here, once again, one of those win-win situations. You have your connections with the theaters, you have your strengths, the relationships and that, and yeah, thank you for doing that, by the way.
I'm just telling you.
I got to write you a check.
It's such a good show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And the best thing about that show, we talked about, you know, the part-time thing. You know, whenever I get a chance to do some writing or do some research, whatever, I do. And The Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid, where if you were to see it tomorrow, you'd say, okay, hey, wow, this is really current, a lot of this stuff. It just keeps evolving, because there's always, if anyone knows anybody who might be stupid or has done something right. stupid, or if they've seen something stupid in the news or on television, it will never stop, and it doesn't stop. So I just keep gathering the new things, and hopefully it continues to be entertaining, because I enjoy presenting it.
I love the fact that you say that, because it can change. It's constantly changing, mm-hmm. and we didn't talk about this before, but we will interview Mike Toomey, who is a good friend of ours that started with us. We did TV and Me.
Yes.
We've still been doing it for 20 years.
That show inspired.
Helped you. Mike's show helped you.
Exactly.
Mike and I have been doing that for 20 years. So talk about this. So you jump into this. You decide to do this show. Mm-hmm. And this is what I love. And I will tell you this. You talked earlier about eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do that.
Right.
So, you know, I've got like 5 things on the burner. You have that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking Las Vegas, you're talking Idiot's Guide to Fixing Stupid, you're talking your company,
correct. For heavens,
and then stand-up.
Right.
Come on. How great is that?
And as long as we're talking about this, I might as well put it out there. You know, my Timmy Talks is something that I'd like to work on too, which isn't all me.
Right.
You're familiar with TED Talks. We just want to do a comedy version of that. So, you know, we'll put that under your arm when you go in.
You're kind of like the Simon Cowell of Chicago.
That's the most revolting thing I've ever heard. It's disgusting. I appreciate that.
So what? Let's talk about the future then. Let's talk about, you're just going to ride this wave as long as it goes?
Well, Thursday is my brother's birthday.
No, I would like to, boy, if I could do 3-4 Cochran shows with you guys every year. Do a little bit more stand-up. I'm at the point with the carpet cleaning business. It's kind of, you know, set it and forget it. And I'm kind of looking right. for a mentor to kind of become mini-me and do those things, so that I can pay a little bit more attention to the comedy. Because it keeps you young. It keeps you happy. My wife knows it's my first love. So she's like, okay, go ahead, do that. Good. I got the house to myself. She.
Well, then I have to say this. But when I look at our old... 8x10s, our promo shots from 1982. Out of all of us, you have changed the least.
It's probably the bad hairdo. No, I
it's a fact. Okay, no, it's a fact. Well, so we're gonna wrap this up, but you know what we're gonna wrap it up with?
The Ricky Quickies.
The Ricky Quickies. Okay. Rick Hewitt, who started Zanies, as we talked about before on our Inside the Actor Studio, they have their 10 questions. Mm-hmm. We have the Ricky Quickies. So are you ready, Tim?
Yes.
Here we go. Most talented staff, and you know what I mean by talented.
Right. I have to go with the Funny Bone in Pittsburgh, mid-'80s.
Oh, you know, that's a good one. Yeah,
see, you remember that.
I do, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't even know why I'm laughing, because I have no history with this. They're talented other than the fact that they're hot. You have more involved.
No, because we do come from different angles. Yes. You were married.
I was married.
Right,
yes.
When we started doing it. I was single as all get out.
That's true.
So I have a lasting memory of the...
Very good. Very good. That's a good one. That's a good one.
I was there for more than one night. Yes. Let's just put it that way.
Single most influential comic.
If it doesn't have to be stand-up, it's Groucho.
I would have guessed that for you.
Okay.
Yeah, you quote him a lot. You've mentioned it a lot. Marx Brothers in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if it's Carson doing his monologue was probably my single most...
That's a good answer. That's a great answer. Person who everyone thinks is funny, but you don't.
And I'll take a lot of flack for this. I love her personality. I don't love her stand-up. Ellen DeGeneres.
Really?
I don't like
her.
I don't like her stand-up.
Oh, that's good.
I love her. I think she is charming. I think when she's riffing, when she's off the cuff with the guest, fantastic. I've never liked the stand-up.
This is why we do this, so we can learn things we didn't know. Hottest room ever.
Comedy Cottage in Rosemont.
Yeah, that was we all got our start there, and you realized how bad the other ones were after you left.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nicest celebrity you have opened for.
I've opened for many. I want to say, and people may, he's a celebrity. Greg Proops from Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh, yeah.
He was the most amazing guy. He chatted. He talked with you. He visited. And I give him so much credit. We were talking one night, and I said, I hope to see you again. And I had a Cuban cigar, and I gave him a Cuban cigar.
Very good.
We played the same club about a year and a half later with Vernon Hills Zanies. He walked in, and he goes, Tim! And he walks over to me. He goes, that cigar was so wonderful. Thank you so very much. I just was like, I gave him so much credit for doing that.
How great is that?
That was fantastic.
That's a good story. That's a good story. Biggest ass you've ever opened for?
David Spade.
Oh, wow.
And I'll tell you. I went right before David Spade, and then it was Bobcat Goldthwait. So I'll say that I was opening for it. This was a theater in, it was the Thomas and Mack in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And there's a lot of people there. David Spade, well, first he was rude to me and everybody else who talked to him. And he went on stage, and he's reading off his notes. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's probably getting paid good money to do this show. He's the middle act. He's reading off. It was unpleasant from start to finish.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. Venue that's still on your bucket list.
I don't know if it could happen, but I'd like to play the Chicago Theater. Right here in town.
Oh, that's a good call.
What a great venue. It's, you know, the history.
Little old time. Yeah, I agree.
I just think that would be fantastic.
Nice setup, too. Mm-hmm. Nice setup. Largest crowd you've ever performed for?
At Bally's in 1990, they had Chicago Weekend, and they had a big show in their big theater. And I want to say there was 4,000 people there.
Okay.
And also on the show, besides myself, and you're going to think this is where... Sinatra was on. He was on the tail end of the show. But Mike Ditka was there. The guy? I can't think of his name. He's the Chicago guy. He always sings "Take Me Out to the Ball." Anyway,
Joe Mantegna.
Joe Mantegna. Okay. Thank you very much. But that was Rodney Dangerfield was on that show as well. So that it was four grand there. It was fantastic.
Worst comic you've ever seen.
The worst comic I've ever seen. I'm not going to take the new talents. I'm going to take some of the people. There was a guy who played a guitar and he had red hair. Elton Cross, I think, was the worst.
Who got arrested?
Yeah, he got arrested
for rape or something.
He was. I saw him probably eight times, and I was just like, how could this get worse? You should get better. He's always walking backwards on stage.
That's good. No, that's good. How about this? You should have this. Oddest thing that has ever happened to you while you're on stage.
How come I know the answers to this?
I know. This is good.
So, well, it was the symposium, comedy at the symposium in Lyle.
Lyle.
And so basically, you are on the lower portion of the room, and the seats go upward in kind of like a half moon, whatever. So the people would have to come down the stairs towards the stage in order to leave. I'm in the middle of my act, and this guy comes walking down and vomits right in front of the stage. Quickly.
Prop act.
And first of all, it's awful looking. It smells. People are disgusted. So they're like, all right, we called maintenance to come. They took a black curtain, a black theater curtain, and laid it on top of it until the show was over.
Until Northwest Carpet Cleaning could get there later in the day.
I still have that curtain.
Yes. That's good. Worst condo?
Mine right now. Right. Worst condo. I want to say I didn't travel as much in the 80s as I would have liked to, but I would say in Dayton, Ohio, Wiley's condo.
The Dayton Towers.
Yes.
I know them well. Yeah. No carpeting.
It smells.
Tile. Yeah. And then finally, if you could bring back one comic from the dead and work with them, who would it be?
Yeah, we talked about Carson already. That would be fun. I don't know. That's a real. I actually, you know who I would like to, only because he was so physical and he delivered everything. Curly Howard, I think.
Wow.
Curly Howard, yeah, because he just. Talk about personality. I mean, physical personality.
Yeah.
You know, facial expressions.
Yep.
He could not say anything. It couldn't sound serious coming out of his mouth.
So that's true.
I really think that would be a
big
good
Stooges
one
fan.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Absolutely.
Well, Tim, I found out things that I didn't know. This is why we're doing this.
That's right.
So I was very pleased with that. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Go ahead.
We're going to get together many more times.
That's right. We've got more coming up. So many comics set up for this. So please tune back in to Sit Down, Stand Ups. I'm John DeCause.
I'm Tim Becker. See you next time. Bye.